this episode, join Andy and John as they discuss WWF Backlash 2001. Welcome to the road home from wrestling.
I feel safest of all. I can lock all my doors, and it's the only way to live in cars.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Road Home from Wrestling podcast. My name's Andy, coming to you live to tape from the Road Home from Wrestling World headquarters of the world. And coming to us live to tape also from the Satellite World headquarters, it's John. What up, John?
Not much, guys. I am trying not to sweat to death. It is 75 degrees in my house, which doesn't seem hot, but it is.
It's interesting. You know, if you go back in the history of the Road Home from Wrestling podcast, you will find that I do less and less interviews during the summer months because I can't record with my air conditioner on. And so, you know, that's usually when I always claim I'm retiring from doing interviews or something like that, right when, and then I'll pick it back up in the winter.
Because just don't want to turn the AC on.
Pretty much. Well, it's too loud. So yeah. You can't record with it on. But, well, John, today we're doing something a little different. This is an idea that you and I had out of nowhere last night, and we are just so eager to put out episodes to, you know, make sure that the Road Home from Wrestling fans and listeners are out there with stuff to listen to. On Memorial Day weekend, we decided to cover a WWE pay-per-view.
Actually, it was a WWF pay-per-view.
Thank you. That's first of many times you're going to be correcting me today because I did not watch this. But John, I didn't watch it in the past, meaning, and I really wasn't into wrestling around this time. But John, you were, right?
Yeah. So my peak wrestling, like WWE, WWF, was probably 2000 to 2004. And like the height of it was around 2001. Like WrestleMania 17, I will like fall on my sword as the best WrestleMania of all time. And I just think all the storylines from that year typically were pretty good. But I was also like a freshman in high school. And so I just thought it was like the bee's knees at the time. Watching it back now, the product is a little better today, but so I was excited. I was like, hey, what we should do, because we kind of like talk about it, I was like, why don't we watch like some old pay-per-views that are on the network, like readily available, and we'll just review those. And so you suggested, hey, why don't you pick one from like an era that you really enjoyed, and I'll pick one that I really enjoyed, and then we'll swap, we'll take notes, and then we'll compare, you know, our thoughts.
That's right. That's right. It's a virtual dick measuring competition, and that's what we're doing on the Road Home from Wrestling podcast. But, you know, I was not watching wrestling around this time. You know, this was when I was all about the ladies and music, and that's all I cared about. And I was trying to go to college and discover partying at the same time, which is a very difficult thing to do. I was just too busy for this shit, man. And honestly, this is a very strange thing. But I remember when I was younger thinking WCW looks so good. It's clearly the better choice just aesthetically. And I remember seeing guys like Mankind and, you know, and Stone Cold and stuff like that and thinking that's what the rednecks at my school like. And I don't want to be like them. And so I always thought that WWF was kind of cheap looking, and that's just my opinion. Now, obviously I'm wrong about that, you know, and it's fun to go back and look at that, but that's how little I cared about wrestling back then, is that I didn't give a shit about any of this.
I mean, but to be fair, I think you are kind of right. Like WWE, especially during like the Attitude Era, they didn't give a shit about anything. They're like, let's put chicks out there in like bikinis. Let's put Sable out there in a sackcloth and have her take it off. And she's got like handprints painted on her boobs. Like that's redneck stuff. Like it's not classy.
Yeah.
But it gets people's attention.
It does. And I just remember, like I said, the people that were doing the crotch chops, the people that were wearing the DX shirts and the 316 shirts, they were not people that I wanted to associate with in my school. I thought, yuck, I don't want any part of that. And I mean, that's just a long history of me being better than everybody else, which is, you know, it's still how I live my life today. So,
Well, clearly, me liking WWE, WWF was the better of the two sides because we won out in the end.
It's true. Well, John, tell us, what the hell are we talking about today?
So, like I said, 2001 was kind of like my peak interest in WWE. Gosh, I'm even correcting myself. This is going to be a long episode. And so I figured with the Backlash pay-per-view having its third reincarnation in WWE coming up next month, I thought, why don't we cover Backlash 2001 for two reasons. One, I don't necessarily remember seeing this show or Judgment Day, but I remember every other pay-per-view from that year. And also because Backlash, in my opinion, had the best set every single year. Those swinging like meat hooks were the coolest thing.
Yeah, I honestly, I saw the set and was like, meh, I don't care. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just like, I don't put as much stock in that. There's a couple things I don't give a shit about. One of them is like belts. I don't care what belts look like. Everyone's like, oh my God, this belt's better than that belt. No, when this one, they put the strap on that. I don't care about any of that. The set, I don't care about that either. Unless it's like, I mean, I really like Halloween Havoc, which we may end up talking about that and talking about why I like those sets versus the WWF sets, but it's not a big deal to me. So my point.
Those are two things that are very big to me. Like, I love the design belts, the design of belts, and I love the sets. And like when WWE eventually did away with like pay-per-view specific sets, like it was so heartbreaking when they did that for like 3 years. And they just used like the SmackDown and Raw sets. I was like, this is such a waste. And then they brought them back, and then the pandemic happened, and now we don't have them again.
Yeah, it's true. But this is, John, this is a way for us to leave the days of the pandemic and go back to a different time, you know, where we had a heel Stone Cold. We had the invasion angle sort of kind of happening, sort of
starting.
And we had a confused Drusifer Jones when I was watching this last night on a few of the angles. So I'm very interested to hear you explain some of this stuff. Most of it was explained by the, you know, the packages that we got so much of, obviously. They showed that one package twice, and I was like, all right.
This is which one? The one with Shane?
Yes. Yeah. That was annoying. But we'll talk about that. So, well, John, you know, this show was in 2001, and it is live from, let's see here, there's 17,000 fans. I think they said 17,154. It looks fucking packed. It's the Allstate Arena in Chicago, and Jim Ross and Paul Heyman are on the call, which is one of the best, you know, pairings of folks that are doing announcing, don't you think?
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. You take Jerry Lawler out of the equation, and I think that the stock rises in commentary automatically. But then add in Paul Heyman, who's like honestly the best like promo cutter probably in the world. Add him to commentary for 3 hours, and you're going to get an entertaining show.
I cannot wait to tell you later when Paul Heyman got broken. He got broken in this show and was like, didn't know what to say anymore. But we'll get to that. That's going to be great. So we get a package right off the bat. It is Triple H and Stone Cold versus the Destruction Bros, which is what I like to call them. You know, the Brothers of Destruction. And, you know, this is going to be the main event. And all the titles are on the line. And there's some convoluted reason why that is. And it's a strange main event. We're going to talk about it in detail. But as a young man, John, were you excited about this main event? Were you wondering what was going to happen?
Hell yeah, I was excited. All the titles were on the line. Like, that's the most, like, exhilarating thing ever. Because you're like, oh my God, are Undertaker and Kane going to both win the IC title and the WWF title? Are Stone Cold and Triple H going to win the tag team titles? Like, you were guaranteed a title change. And that's what is, like, super exciting.
Well, guaranteed, huh? I was surprised that we got a finish in that match. I was like, no way we're getting a finish. But it's great. I just can't wait to hear if you were still excited about it after the like 17th heat spot arm on bar. Kane's arm. So we'll talk all about that though. Okay, so Allstate Arena Chicago, Jim Ross, Paul Heyman, and we open up with a match that you're going to tell us all about, John, and that's a six-man tag. It's the Dudley Boys versus X-Factor.
Yeah, so you got Bubba Ray, D-Von, and Spike Dudley going against X-Pac, Justin Credible, and Albert.
Now, John, before you start, real quick question. This is kind of the peak, in my opinion. I could be wrong. Maybe it gets worse. Maybe it's not as bad. But this is kind of where the term X-Pac heat comes from around this time, I believe, where people were just so fucking sick of him. They didn't boo him because they hated him. They booed him because it was go away heat. They don't want to see him anymore. So X-Pac got a lot of reactions in this crowd or in this match. How did you feel about X-Pac at this time?
By the end of the match, I was like as a older, like a more mature person now, I remember watching like this now and being like, this guy can't really wrestle. Like, why is he here?
Okay. Like, well, you're 100% wrong about that, but go ahead.
Well, I don't think X-Pac's very like charismatic, and I don't know. I just wasn't entertained by him. I thought that, you know, Justin Credible and Albert were pulling more of the legwork, but they were making X-Pac out to be the, quote, leader of X-Factor.
Well, it's named after him. And the X-Factor, as you said, it's Albert. It's the other two folks you mentioned there. And, Justin Credible. He's got heat with me. I don't like Justin Credible. He set up an interview with me twice. Like, he asked us. He asked me. And then canceled both times, and then he ended up in jail. And I was like, "Oh God!" So he's got more problems, than he needs to right now. But it's a good reason
to cancel. Like, he's not going to know, but he's not going to use his one call to be like, "Oh shit, I got this interview on a podcast."
Just ridiculous, though. I don't know. I love stories like that. I have so many of them, and so many I won't share, obviously. But that one I like to share because it's hilarious. But now the Dudleys. This is six man tag. So tell me, who are the Dudleys? And tell me who's the face and who's the heel in this.
So the Dudley Boys are the faces of this match, which is odd because for most of their career, they're usually the bad guys. But I don't know where Spike. Oh, no, wait. They were teaming with Spike at this point because he helped them in the TLC 2 match at Mania. But yeah, the whole Dudley Boy clan was back together almost. I think they were missing Big Dick Dudley. And, I feel like there was another Dudley, Big Daddy Dudley had so many kids, and JR made sure to let us know that throughout this match. But yeah, the Dudleys are from ECW fame, and they somehow made their way to WWE and kind of, ran the show for a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, it was great to see little Spike Dudley. I don't get to see him wrestle very often. I mean, not like he's on the indies or whatever. It's just kind of one of those things where I don't have a ton of experience watching him wrestle in WWE, especially mostly in ECW. He's awesome. And like, he was kind of one of the stars of this match, just taking ridiculous bumps and doing all kinds of stuff. So, John, why don't you tell us all about this? And don't forget to mention who the referee is in this match, please.
Was the ref Mike Chioda?
No, it was Teddy Long.
Was it Teddy Long? Okay, yeah. I made note in a few matches who the ref was, but
this is well. It's funny because this is a six man tag. Teddy Long, they like brought him out just to do this, and then I don't think he refs any of the other matches.
Maybe that's why he gets inspired to always do like big tag team matches because they only brought him out for the bigger tag. So when he became GM, he's like, holla holla holla, let's do this 19 man tag.
All right. Well, tell us all about it, John.
All right. So there was a hot start to get things going with the Dudleys taking control. At one point, Spike comes off the top and stomps directly onto Albert's stomach. Like, there was no bracing for it. Spike just literally like spiked straight into his abdomen. And like, I thought his like intestines were going to just start shifting in his stomach. The other Dudleys then chuck Spike over the top onto X-Pac and Justin Credible. Albert starts hitting some big moves and just completely destroys Spike Dudley. And then he grabs him by the belt and literally just carries him across the ring over to his corner to tag out. At one point in commentary, JR made sure to let us know that Big Daddy Dudley's DNA is all over this ring here. And I thought that, like, that was the most disgusting thing he could have ever said. Devon then takes most of the heat and gets worked over by all three members of X Factor. Well, Albert.
Real quick, he also gets a bad case of ring post-itis. I don't know if you saw that. And also, I noticed there is a Man Cowl 316 sign in the crowd.
Wow. I noticed that there was someone dressed up like Warhorse in the crowd in the front row during this match. And so I was like, sweet, Warhorse was around back then, too, in 2001.
Time-traveling Warhorse was a new game. Yeah.
So he gets beat up by all three members of X Factor. Albert hits a really cool double underhook, like stalling suplex, where he kept Devon up for probably like 15 seconds before dropping him. It was pretty impressive because Devon's not a small guy. The littler guys try to stop Devon from getting the hot tag, but fail. Bubba comes in and works over X-Pac and Just Incredible. And then he gets a Bubba Bomb on Just Incredible. What do you think about the Bubba Bomb? Do you like it?
Now, does he go off the second rope or does he go off the top rope?
No, this was like where he like does the full Nelson and then he picks him up and then he like slams him down and does like the sit out like slam with them.
I was thinking of the power bomb. I'm sorry. See, that's – I don't – you know, I haven't seen enough Dudleys. You know, I need to go back and watch a lot more of them. I think those guys are awesome. I think they're tremendous wrestlers. And, you know, as much as some people don't like them and everything like that for – well, at least Bubba, a lot of people don't like him. But, you know, I think those guys are awesome. And it's fun to see him as a babyface, like you're talking about earlier. They are some of the wrestlers that have been able to get the most heel heat like ever in the history of wrestling. So seeing them function as a face team and also be able to do that is tremendous. And the way that they use Little Spike Dudley as a weapon is awesome. Have you ever noticed about Little Spike Dudley and what that means? Like what his name means?
No, I don't. What is it?
So, well, he does the acid drop, and like when he's interviewed, he sounds like he's fucked up. And Little Spike Dudley is an acronym for LSD.
Okay.
So the drugs.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's why they always had like, you know, tie-dye stuff on.
You got it,
That's what like druggies, you know, wear. They all just sit around and tie-dye and do drugs. It's fine.
That's all I do.
Then they hit a what's up on Credible, and then they call for the tables. But as Devon's out getting a table, Albert comes out of nowhere and just hits him with a big boot, takes him out. Everybody else body splashes Bubba in the corner with Albert getting the last one. He is like, he eventually becomes A-Train. He does the whole like, he speeds up, takes him out, and then X-Pac, Just Credible, both hit a super kick on him, and the X-Pac goes for the pin, and X-Factor picks up the victory.
But they that's do. Not all that happens. Yeah, but that's not all that happens here, because this crowd's pissed. They wanted tables. They wanted all this stuff. And you know, like I said, the Dudleys are fucking great baby faces. So what do they do, John?
So Just Incredible brings in a table, and they try to put Bubba through it, but Devon pulls Albert out. Spike hits a Dudley dog on Just Incredible, and then they 3D X-Pac through the table to make the crowd happy.
The crowd loves that. And, you know, the crowd was chanting for tables the whole match. I mean, this crowd was hot.
They hadn't even, like, made their entrance yet. Like, they just heard the fireworks start. And they're like, we want tables. We're like, all right, can we, like, come out first?
Yeah. What'd you think? I thought this was fun. It was a great opener. It gives you what you want from an opener. Not only did the Dudleys lose, which helps, you know, get the X Factor some heat, they also retained their heat then by beating up X-Pac at the end. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was a good, solid opener that, you know, it got everybody their job in. It definitely helps with X Factor because I think it gets them heat, not just because of X-Pac. Like,
yes, oh yeah.
Like, like they're trying to be the real dastardly bad guys, you know, hurting their faces, but it doesn't work.
Now, John, you got heat with me now because you did this great review of this match here, but you didn't mention the most important thing in this match, and that was happened during the entrance. We watched the WWE Network version of this, and X-Factor came out to some generic, like, you know, fucking dubbed over song. They didn't come out to the Everlast song or whatever it is, right? Because WWE ain't paying for that shit.
Huh. I guess I didn't notice. I had forgotten what their music was.
I don't want to get a thing like that. I'm a hungry
noticed, so earlier, like kind of where the idea came from to watch this pay-per-view, I was watching Royal Rumble earlier in the afternoon yesterday. And when I was watching that, they kept bleeping out anytime they did like WWE. They would never allow the F. But this show, they were like, who cares? Just say all the WWFs you want.
I can't remember why that is, but like some of them, they do it and some of them, they don't. I think it just has to do with when the judgments and all that stuff came and how they were like, you know, trying to get out of it at the time. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's this was a, you know, other than, you know, editing music and things like that, you know, it wasn't edited in that way. So
have you noticed on like some of the shows, like I was watching a Nitro like a year ago, and all of a sudden the Hardy Boys music started playing during one of the matches. I'm like, what are we doing? This is like so obvious that we're just splicing in random songs.
If you go back and watch some Jericho matches from like 97 in WCW, they have his Break the Wall Down like fucking song playing. It's like, wait a second. But, you know, I mean, the people who edited that probably are not wrestling fans and they were just told to do whatever. So,
yeah.
All right, so next.
Go ahead. I was going to say, so after that, backstage, the Duchess of Queensbury shows up, and her and William Regal discuss how disgusting and gross Chicago is. And they say, I cannot wait to get out of this town.
I was really excited for this. This is, you know, William Regal's one of my favorites. This particular match is one of the best heel gimmicks of all time. We're going to get into it. So that was great. Kurt Angle then is interviewed by Lillian Garcia backstage while he's polishing his gold medals, which is hilarious. And he says he's going to win. And he's like, hey, I got to stop talking to you because I got to go polish my medals.
That's right. You got to work off some of that pre-match jitters, you know, gotta get that energy out.
So then the announcers tell us about Rhino versus Raven for the Hardcore Championship, and then I was so confused by this. Then they show, like, while they're talking about that, they show a clip from Sunday Night Heat that shows Jerry Lynn defeat Crash Holly for the light heavyweight title.
Yes.
What's that have to do with anything?
Well, they were just highlighting that, you know, another show happened already, and, you know, we had a new champion, so we might have a new champion here.
It's weird. Yeah, they were just like, yeah, well, you know, we got this match coming up with Raven and the other guy. And Jerry Lynn, Crash Holly. You know, it's like that.
You see him cheat to win? He pulled the tights.
That was great. By the way, Jerry Lynn, a former interview subject of the Road Home from Wrestling podcast, go back and listen to the Jerry Lynn interview. One day, you know, I was communicating with him, and I ended up, like, texting with him. So I'll never get tired of that kind of thing. Like I woke up one morning and I have a text from Jerry Lynn and I'm like, oh my God, life is good. So then we get a no DQ falls count anywhere Hardcore Championship match. The champion Hardcore Championship match. The champion Rhino, who is the heel, versus Raven, who is face Raven. How did you feel about Rhino and Raven at this time, John?
I thought Rhino was the coolest guy ever. I thought his gores were they were the best spears in my opinion at the time. And so I was excited to see him on WWE, WWF TV, cause I had only seen him a few times on ECW prior to this. And so then bringing him over, like in my little mind as like a 14, 15 year old, was like, oh my God, this is so awesome.
Have you ever seen Rhino in person?
No.
He is the widest man you'll ever see. But he's not fat. He's just wide. And with the weirdest thing about Rhino is that if you see him just standing there, it's you can't recognize him. But then he changes his face and does the Rhino face, and you're like, oh my God, that's Rhino. It's like, it's so weird. He looks like a completely normal dude when he isn't making the Rhino face. And it's weird. But yeah, I've seen Rhino a bunch of times. When I first started going to Rockstar, he was coming in all the time, and he is from Detroit, I believe. I think he's from Michigan or something. So he's from around here. And if you look at old shows from Ohio years and years ago, like, he'll be on like tons of them. So, well, how'd you feel about Raven?
Raven, he's much. So I initially got introduced to Raven back in WCW with the whole Raven's Flock. And I thought that was a really dope storyline. And that was like my first introduction into like what a cult kind of looks like. Uh-huh. And then he comes here and he doesn't have that cult, and he's just like whining all the time. And I'm like, this guy's not as cool as he used to be.
My favorite thing about Raven is that, okay, so real quick, and again, this is going to be a long episode, folks. Sorry.
we're living in the past, man. Yes. We gotta talk about all these people.
So nowadays, they try this all the time. And, you know, and I mean, many wrestling promotions try this. They try the "what about me" gimmick, you know, and like Dolph Ziggler, like anytime they don't have anything for him, that's his gimmick, you know. And so there's a lot of guys that try to do this gimmick. I would argue that Raven is the only person to actually ever get that over. You know, the "what about me? What about Raven?" I think that gimmick is tremendous. But you know, a lot of people don't like Raven. A lot of people have had some bad experiences with him. Supposedly, he's a humongous asshole.
What?
Yeah, that's what I heard. So, but I heard that from Dave Chris, so I don't know.
What?
Yeah. So, all right, so let's talk about this match. Raven is out with a shopping cart full of weapons, including the kitchen sink.
Did you see the Frankenstein in there?
No, I did not.
He had a little Frankenstein doll in his cart, which was kind of like his staple. It was like always in his cart, but he never used it as a weapon.
So it's just his buddy. It's like his tag team partner. I gotcha. Well, so to start the match, they trade some garbage can spots and start going for pins immediately, which I like that. You know, I like it when wrestlers try to fucking win. Thank you. Thank you for that. It only takes 30 seconds for them to make it to the outside, though. Rhino eats a chair. This is kind of cool. So he sets up the ring steps and then puts Raven in a chair, and he's going to like dive off the ring steps and kind of like basically flying gore him, you know, but he ends up just eating the chair because Raven moves, and then Raven jumps off the steps and hits like a flying clothesline. That was pretty cool. They brawl up the entrance ramp. Back in the ring, Rhino uses the shopping cart for an attack. He like throws it at him. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
and as we know, the shopping cart was a weapon that was used a lot in ECW. So we're going to talk about that here in a minute. But Raven does the old drop toe hold, sending Rhino into the shopping cart. That looks like it hurts real bad. And that's like one of Raven's moves, the drop toe hold. So we're going to get that again.
Well, that's how the match actually started, because he set up the stop sign in the corner.
That's true.
And drop toe hold. I was like, how many drop toe holds can we get in this match?
As many as possible. So Raven hits a bunch of road sign headshots to Rhino, which sound really cool, including one after hitting the ropes. So he like hits him twice, and then he like runs in the ropes and then hits him. I love that. That's awesome. More shopping cart shenanigans. And we all know what spot's coming at this point. It's because Raven had set up a shopping cart in the corner, and we see that Rhino's loading up for a big old gore, right? And so, again, we get a drop toe hold, which sends Rhino into the shopping cart, right? And when I mean into it, there's like that little part that swings where the other shopping cart can be put in the cart corral that all you motherfuckers need to put your cart in. You know, don't be leaving your cart laying around. Put it in the goddamn cart corral.
Don't put it in a parking spot. It's so frustrating when you go to pull into a spot and then there's a cart sitting at the front. Like, you asshole, just put it up.
There's a really funny thing you should Google. It's called cart Narcs, and it's these like comedians from a radio show, and they just hang out in parking lots, just like, and they see someone do that, and they run up at them, they go, "Woo, woo, 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 we're the cart narcs," and they make them explain the reason why, and they never have a good reason why, and it's awesome. But usually they get angry. It's good times. So you know, he goes into the shopping cart. Rhino is the guy that goes into it, and this is a spot that they stole from ECW from another match. And man, this is why. This show took me almost like three and a half, 4 hours to watch. And the reason is because I kept stopping to try to, you know, find things out that I was like tickling my brain, and I couldn't remember which match it was in, but this definitely is a spot that Rhino's done in the past. So, it's a cool, cool fucking spot. And there's a couple matches tonight that like the whole match is centered around one spot, you know, and this is a good one. So
yeah.
We get a few more headshots with the kitchen sink, but Rhino kicks out. I'm sorry. I hate the kitchen sink joke. It's so fucking dumb. They do it in all these matches, and there's like, oh, God, kitchen sink. You know, it's terrible.
The only match that it makes sense in is the Good Housekeeping match.
Exactly. Yes. But that's awful. Anyway.
And I don't even know if they had a kitchen sink in that match. They had an ironing board.
So,
bag of flour.
my only kind of like, if I got a gripe about this match is that, you know, Rhino kicks out after being hit after going through the cart and then kicked or hit in the head a bunch of times at the kitchen sink. He kicks out, stands up, and then gores Raven out of nowhere, and the match is over. So, you know, Rhino retains his championship, but I mean, he didn't sell shit.
No. There was even a spot that I don't think you mentioned where he was like gorilla pressing the shopping cart, and Raven just like hits him with a kendo stick, and he drops, and the cart literally just like lands on his chest and like bounces off, and it's only good for like a 1.5 count. And I was like, right. Okay.
But we get that in a couple matches tonight, and I think that this show has a big timing issue that we'll talk about, because some of the matches are ridiculously long. Some of them are really short, and I kind of want it the other way around, you know? So, but we'll talk about it. You know, so Rhino retains after the match. The funniest thing in the whole show is that Paul Heyman claims that Rhino is 6'2".
I didn't catch that.
He is not 6'2", okay? He is like 5'8 or something. I'm 5'11-ish, and he is shorter than me by far. So that's a lot of fun. Anyway.
Maybe he's got a lot of padding in those boots when he wrestles.
Now, John, do you want to tell us about the Big Show versus Shane McMahon video package? I have the notes on it, but you can tell us all about it if you want.
Yeah, so they throw it back to a match that was announced on SmackDown 3 days prior, where Shane McMahon is reading a fairy tale of kind of like Jack and the Beanstalk, where he's talking about having to fight the Big Show and how, you know, he's ready to topple the giant.
Magic beans.
Yeah.
This reminds me so much of the we're going to go to that well again, the feud between Roman Reigns and Big Show, where Roman gave the infamous Magic Beans promo, which is one of the worst promos in the history of the world. It's terrible. So, you know, that's all I could think about during this. But I really did like the video package. I think that Shane McMahon as the babyface who owns WCW, that's kind of like where he's at in this whole thing. He's tremendous. I thought he was really good. And, you know, this kind of promo thing was pretty neat.
Yeah. And I like that the fact, you know, they gave us a prop, they gave us a book that he literally just like taped over and wrote like Shane O'Mac.
Pretty funny.
Over it. But that sends us to a backstage interview where Michael Cole is interviewing Shane and immediately gets interrupted by Stephanie, who says, "Shane, all you have to do is apologize to Dad and this will be all over." And he says, "No, I'm going to get my happy ending tonight."
Oh, from you?
Maybe, I don't know.
Wait, there's a constant, you know, kind of underlying joke with wrestling fans about how Shane McMahon and Stephanie McMahon kind of like each other a little bit, maybe a little too much, because when they lock eyes, it is kind of, they like have sexual chemistry on screen. It's fucking gross. So, my notes for that segment says Michael Cole holds a mic while Stephanie looks amazing and says words. That's what So then we get another backstage thing. Stone Cold is backstage walking in with Deborah, and he is
He is dragging Deborah.
Yeah. Well,
it is weird.
This is not good because we get Kevin Kelly. I like Kevin Kelly. So he talks to Stone Cold. Stone Cold is a total jerk to Deborah. He is a heel, obviously, which is one, you know, it's well established. This is one of the worst ideas in the history of the WWF, WWE, is him turning heel. And even later, we have a sign that says Austin equals worst heel ever in the very front row of the show, which is awesome. So the fans knew about this. But the main problem, and I don't want to go into it too much, is that Stone Cold has a history of like domestic violence.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing for a storyline here. Ugh, yuck.
Yeah. It was like so weird and uncomfortable, especially like, I don't think at the time we didn't know that he had the like domestic abuse like stuff, but like now in the future, like this didn't age well at all.
It's not good. Yeah. Now you don't know much about Deborah, do you? Do you know anything about her?
I just know her from like partnering with Jeff Jarrett for a long time. And then like her stuff with Stone Cold, cause her and Stone Cold got married, didn't they?
I believe so. Yeah. Like they got shoot married. You know, before that she was, and again, I don't really know if this was real or not, but she was kayfabe, at least married to, Mongo McMichael in WCW. And that's where I know her from the most is, she was the beauty queen at WCW and she'd always talk shit about, Nancy, Sullivan at the time and Miss Elizabeth. And she'd always like lend someone her shoe and her and Mongo were like the worst best duo like ever. It's like is so bad, so good at the same time. I love it. You know, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit on another episode. But John, we get Coach. Wow, Coach is interviewing the Duchess, right?
There were so many backstage interviews in this damn show. Like it was annoying.
It's like a modern Raw, you know?
So the Duchess is at catering and she sees these disgusting looking sausage links, which I agree, they did look gross. And then there was some like pasta salad and then random oranges. And she's telling her little security guards like how gross everything looks. And Coach interrupts and says, Duchess, can you tell us the rules of this match? And she starts to tell them. And then William Regal interrupts. If this was your wrestling promotion, like everyone would be fired.
Oh, for sure.
Because of so much interrupting. But William Regal interrupts and he says, no, we don't have to tell you the rules of the match. You'll learn them as we go. And then they scurry off and Coach just looks befuddled of what's just happened.
It's classic heel gaslighting, you know, from Regal here. And that's what this whole match is. It's a fucking giant gaslit like room. It's great. And just if you're wondering out there, the reason why everyone will be fired from my promotion is because I think that interruptions is the most overused and lazy storytelling device in pro wrestling. And if you try to take that away, then all of a sudden they actually have to write like stories and stuff. So that's why I hate it. But yeah, Duchess of Queensbury Rules video package. Now, I did a little research, and there is actually a marquee of Queensbury Rules, and that's for boxing. And basically, it's very similar to modern-day boxing. I mean, that's kind of what, you know, the modern-day boxing is kind of all about. And sometimes it's shortened to the Queen's Rules, you know. So this is kind of a real thing, you know, Duchess Rules video package. One of the greatest moments in wrestling history comes from this feud too, where Regal drinks Jericho's pee, which and makes this amazing face. How did you feel about William Regal back in the day, and how do you feel about him now?
I don't think I appreciated William Regal as much then as I do now. I think now that I can kind of see his career in retrospect, I really appreciate like what he's done for the business. But at the time I didn't like he was doing his job. He was a total heel and I hated him because he was so annoying and like over the top. But like looking back now, like just like his facial expressions alone, like he could teach like a seminar on just that, on like how to actually react to things that are going on in the like environment around you. And then Jericho, I think, is like, he's probably my favorite wrestler of all time. So
yeah, it's an easy argument to make that Jericho's the best wrestler ever. I mean, easy. And I don't believe that, but I think it could be true. You know, I mean, it's an opinion-based thing anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I knew William Regal from Steven Regal at, you know, in WCW. That's where I kind of know him from more.
He's a man's man.
Well, that's in WWF later, but
was it?
Yeah. Yeah, that was certainly in WWF. But you know, he's also has a really cool book. It's called The Golden Road, I think. And it's basically just very frank discussions of his addiction problems. And it's amazing. If you go back and read the book and you start to watch some of his wrestling matches, you realize that he's fucking like so wasted in some of these shows, but is still just constantly putting on amazing matches and just putting everybody over. What he does the best is my favorite thing maybe in wrestling ever. And just to use a little hyperbole, is when a heel can get egg on their face, but they still are a threat. And that's Regal. He's constantly getting egg on his face. But he's still a mean son of a bitch that you don't want to fuck with, you know? So it's pretty awesome. Now, John, you're going to tell us all about this match, right?
I am. So the name of the game is that no one knows the rules except William Regal and the Duchess, who is sitting at ringside in a red throne. So Regal, right out the gate, starts fighting dirty, cheap-shotting Jericho, like in the corner while the ref's trying to break up the hold. He's constantly kneeing Jericho in the face and taunting the crowd. At some point, Jericho does hit like a second rope Hurricane Rana that looks pretty good. I don't remember exactly where it was at because I forgot to make note of it, but I did remember it. Jericho makes a comeback. He bulldogs Regal and then puts on... and then hits a lion salt and goes for the pin, but the bell immediately rings as he goes for the pin, and the ref is really confused because he doesn't know what's going on. But the Duchess explains that is the end of round one.
Right, and it's referee Tim White, I think. He's the guy that killed himself in all those videos later on. They're very terrible, so... That's not good stuff. So, but one thing that you failed to mention is that they had some promos to start where Regal introduced the Duchess to the crowd and they just chanted asshole at him, which was awesome. And then the Duchess sits on her throne and then Jericho calls her ugly, which she kind of is. So, you know, and by the way, whoever played the Duchess, fantastic. She did a great job.
Yeah, and there was a lot of like joking on commentary where Paul Heyman knew everything about what was supposed to be going on in this match, and JR was clueless, and he kept calling her like ma'am, and Heyman would be like, no, call her your highness.
Well, and Heyman was lying too. It was clear that he didn't know shit, and he'd be like, oh no, JR, that's the way it is, you know, like I know all about this. It's really funny.
Right, especially like when the bell rang the first time and JR's like, what's going on? He's like, I don't know. And then it's like, oh yeah, no, it was the end of round one. Yeah. Why didn't you know that?
And British wrestling, there used to be a round system, you know, and so this is kind of legit to some extent again. But go ahead, John.
Okay. So the match starts back up and William Regal tries to do a quick roll up, but it doesn't work. William then puts on a Regal lock, but Jericho gets to the ropes to break it up. Y2J then locks in the walls of Jericho and Regal taps immediately. And the ref raises Jericho's hand as the winner, but the Duchess gets on the mic and acknowledges that you can't win by submission. And so the match is restarted again. So Jericho at this point gets a little frustrated. So he gets out of the ring and starts stalking the Duchess on the outside. But William stops her and clobbers him with the scepter.
Yes, and I want to throw something in here. So she gets the scepter, he gets nailed with the scepter, and then his selling as Regal tries to roll him back in the ring, Regal does the like, oh, you're going to roll yourself in, but Jericho just lays on the apron, and then Regal's like, oh, that's awesome, and then pushes him in. That was great.
So the ref calls for the bell because it's a disqualification. And Jericho's the winner again. But the Duchess clarifies that this is a no disqualification match. So Regal, like you said, he rolls Jericho back in and tries to get the pin, but Jericho kicks out. They battle back and forth with Jericho refusing to give up. Jericho looks like he's going to go for another walls of Jericho, but instead just blatantly kicks William Regal in the nuts, like full blown, straight on the balls and shaft. It looked really painful.
The mortar and the pestle, right?
Yeah. He then baseball slides William Regal into the lap of the Duchess. And this is what made me think, like, gosh, William Regal's so good. So as he's coming up from the Duchess's crotch, he has this like look of like he just like stuffed like four spoiled eggs in his mouth while a skunk just sprayed all over his face. And he's like beside himself with the stench that he had just smelled and what he had just done.
He's horrified too, because he just defiled the Duchess.
Yeah. And I think Jericho comes out and like knocks him down. And then he grabs the Duchess and throws her in the ring. After taking out her guards, he throws her in the ring and then he puts her in the Walls of Jericho.
She taps too. Well, according to commentary, we don't see it, but she taps according to commentary.
Yeah. And so Regal comes in with a chair, hits Jericho, I think it's like three or four times. And then he pins him and picks up the victory. And William Regal is the winner of, I believe, the first and only Duchess of Queensberry rules match.
This match is fantastic. It is an awesome way to get your heel a win that doesn't hurt the babyface in any way, shape, or form, because he got screwed more than once, you know? And so I love this kind of thing. Again, I already said it, but it bears repeating. This is one of the best heel gimmicks ever, period, point blank.
Yeah, I agree with you. William Regal was at – this is kind of like him almost at the peak of his, like, run in WWE before he became, you know, the GM of NXT, because he was the commissioner. And then, like, right after this, I think he like has to go to rehab, but then he comes back and wins like King of the Ring. And like those two for me were like peak William Regal in WWF.
In WCW, one of the things that he would do is he would take he'd take guys that are tremendous wrestlers, but were just jobbers in WCW, and make them a part of his like group of aristocrats, basically, you know. And like he took beautiful Bobby Eaton, you know, who's an old school guy with a fucking mullet, you know, and made him a part of his group. And, you know, there was the Squire, Dave Taylor. It's some of the best shit ever. I love William Regal. I don't think I recognized how awesome he was back in the day, other than I just thought he was a funny dude, because he did goofy ass shit in the ring too. And I, you know, back when I watched WCW, that's where I saw him. But, man, that was a lot of fun. All right, so next we get the Big Show and Vince, and they meet in Vince's office, air quotes. He instructs the Show not to hold back in his match versus Shane McMahon. And Big Show's like, okay, I won't. So he also kind of says, I'm going to win.
Well, Vince tells him he a better win.
That's awesome. He's like, don't worry, Vince, I'm a gonna. we get a video package for the next match, and the match is just – oh, yes – I really like the reason for this next match. Do you know what the reason for the next match is?
I do, but I want you to tell me.
It's just to see who's the best wrestler.
Yeah.
Right? That's awesome. Simple
as that.
I love that. It's tremendous. And it's great because the video package was just those guys winning matches.
Yeah. That's it. Those guys making like jobbers tap out.
Is great. So next we have a 30-minute ultimate submission match, and that's Kurt Angle, heel, versus Chris Benoit, face, the Wolverine, man. So a lot of podcasts like to tiptoe around Chris Benoit and everything. There's so many other terrible people, I'm sure, in wrestling that we don't even know about. He's a wrestler. We're going to talk about him like we would anybody else. So Kurt Angle comes out. He gets on the mic. He runs down Chicago for being fat, and Chris Benoit for being Chris Benoit. And this is a submission Iron Man match. So there's no countouts. There's a 30-second rest period between falls. And, you know, and there's no pins as well, which makes the match look different, you know, because a lot of times there'll be situations where they're kind of on top of each other and stuff, and it would be a pin, but it's not. So the wrestler's focus on what they're trying to do is completely different. And it reminds me of the UWFI rules, from Japan and from Paradigm Pro Wrestling, where pins don't matter. So it just changes the whole way the match looks. John, do you like that? Did you hate it? What did you think?
I was initially excited for it, but then once the match started happening, my excitement dwindled. I don't mind Iron Man matches. I kind of enjoy them, but I think when you make it specific to only submission Iron Man matches, then my interest starts to dwindle for it.
Well, it limits the wrestlers, which in some cases can make people more creative. So, it just depends. Now, I'm going to try to run through this pretty quick because we got a lot to cover and we just killed an hour, and it seemed like it took a second. So, it goes quick, John. all right. So we've already talked about the rules and everything. So at first they take turns getting near falls, but both escape via rope breaks. There's a lot of mirroring going on in this match, which is pretty cool. Angle with a little hokey pokey just at the beginning, but man, he is the king of hokey pokey in this match. And if you're just listening to it for the first time, can you explain hokey pokey?
Yeah, hokey pokey is where the wrestlers, basically the match starts and the two just refuse to actually touch each other. So they, they'll go outside of the ring or they'll just circle each other inside the ring. And one person will go out and the other person will come back in, and then the other one will go out and then the other one will come back in. So it's just the stalling tactic.
Yeah, it's like heel stalling, basically, it was hokey pokey. So, again, this match looks a lot different because there's no pinfalls. And the crowd loves Chris Benoit. And anytime they know when he's about to hit the crossface, that move is over. Because as soon as he is about to get it on, the crowd starts going crazy. Angle escapes each time, though. They roll out in a clutch, and the ref follows them, which is like a big clue that there's going to be an important spot coming, because why would he do that? And what happens is that Angle, he gets a crossface on the floor, all right? He taps the crossface on the floor, excuse me, but it's not false count anywhere. It's got every other stipulation, but it's not false count anywhere, so it doesn't matter. So the ref is there to tell him, no, you can't win here. And then Angle gets some more hokey pokey, threatening Benoit with a chair on the outside. Angle selling his shoulder, using that to, cheap shot Benoit and lock in a knee bar for the first fall. Angle up 1-0. Then they fight with standing strikes until it's chop block city on Benoit. He dodges and gets an cross arm breaker, and he gets a fall. So then it's 1-1. Benoit goes for the cross arm breaker again immediately, but Angle gets a rope break. Irish whips in the corner and chops from Benoit. And that's when this hit me. This is when this hit me. And I've thought this before, but I don't know if it's ever been as clear. When I go back and watch matches like this, in the style of wrestling period in the WWF, WCW and all that back in the day, there is a giant thing missing from the matches. Do you know what that is, John?
I don't.
So, if you go and watch any match today, for the most part, if it's, a decent indie match, or if it's a WWE match, it is strike central. There are kicks, there are punches, there are all kinds of stuff. And there just isn't any of that in any of these matches. So no one's slapping their leg. No, I mean, the only strikes that happen in this match is Benoit doing chops, Yeah. So that whole part of wrestling hasn't made it into wrestling on the mainstream level yet at this point, which makes the matches feel weird to me. And that's just because I'm so used to, I love New Japan. I mean, if New Japan didn't have strikes in it, what the fuck they'd even do? You know what I mean? So it's got a different feel, and I just want to take note of that. Okay, so let's see here. We have the chops from Benoit, and then he knocks down the ref for trying to forcibly break a hold, which doesn't get him DQ'd, which is weird. We get a chair shot from Angle while the ref was down, an ankle lock, and Angle, Kurt Angle, goes up 2-1, all right? Now, Kurt Angle won't respect the 30-second rest period here. He immediately gets another fall, though, with his own crossface. So now Angle's up 3-1. There's a bunch of heat on Benoit with Angle attacking Chris viciously. Benoit gets a hope spot where he backdrops Kurt to the outside. Kurt takes a tremendous bump here, and he sends him into the ring post. Angle cuts him off, though, by sending him into the steel steps and applying an ankle lock on the outside. But they get back in the ring. You know, he puts on a triangle and an abdominal stretch. I thought we were going to get the triangle powerbomb spot, but we didn't, which I appreciate. Benoit gets a hope spot. Or wait, no. Hold on, sorry. Benoit gets to his feet. Oh, this is awesome. Okay, so they're back in the ring. Benoit has just gotten out of this abdominal stretch. He gets to his feet, hip toss takedown, and arm breaker all in one just smooth, perfect motion. And I was like, my God. He's so good. Yeah. Tremendous. Did you have any idea how awesome of wrestlers these guys were back in the day?
I knew that Benoit was really impressive. I mean, like I said, I was like 14 or 15 when all this is happening. So for me, even though I knew it was like not necessarily real, I still was very invested in like the heel face aspect. And so like Angle was like the worst. Like he sucked, which I noticed when he came out, they didn't have the "you suck" chance yet.
Not yet. Yeah, not
yet. They hadn't started. But I was very invested in like, well, he's the bad guy. I'm not going to appreciate anything he does. But Benoit, I was like, oh, wow, this guy's the greatest. Like, he's such a good like wrestler, like traditional wrestler.
My God. And that's what this match is all about. So, I mean, tremendous storytelling as far as that goes. And it's simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. Angle gets a rope break. After that, and then we get a sharpshooter from Benoit with a rope break. Crowd kind of likes that. And then we get this awesome victory roll into a high angle single leg crab from Benoit, and Kurt taps out. My God, that was gorgeous.
Was this the one where he had like his knee in the on the back of Angle's head? Yes. And was just like forcing it to the mat? See, so you said that like Angle wasn't abiding by the 30-second rule. Benoit wasn't abiding by like Angle would tap and he would just keep the hold on.
Yeah.
Until the ref like forced him to stop it.
Well, he's a Wolverine. He's like an animal, you know, he can't be reasoned with. We know that. So, all right. Try not to make any jokes. Okay. So, Angle's up 3-2 at this point, and then we get hokey pokey with 12 minutes left as Kurt tries to kill as much time as possible by running away. I mean, we're talking like 3 minutes of him just running away.
Yeah. It was so aggravating.
What gets you to hate him, right? And this is where I see the sign in the front row that says Austin equals worst heel ever. Now, Angle will not let Benoit back in the ring, and this takes quite a while. So basically, you know, anytime Benoit, he comes out to chase Angle, Angle gets in the ring, and then Benoit tries to roll in, and Angle just, you know, starts stomping a mud hole in him, and that goes on for a while. There is very little dead time in this match, though. That's something that is incredible about this match. Both guys are constantly moving, which helps the pace of the match, right? And, you know, because they're going to do a few boring things, at least they do them constantly. I mean, I think there was a double down at one point in this match that lasted like 2 seconds, and they're both getting up already. They were cranking, man. And both guys looked tired, but they were just executing everything. I don't know. I was really impressed with all this. So, all right, so 8 minutes to go, and Heyman is running out of things to say because he says, if any man slaps on a submission hold, their opponent's in big trouble.
Okay? That's right.
And guess what? Water is wet. Angle hits a suplex on the floor. We get an eye rake and more heat from Kurt Angle. Kurt has a choke on, and we get the arm drop spot, you know, like he drops – the ref drops Benoit's arm, and then, you know, on the third time, he fires up. He starts to fire up, but Kurt Angle hooks his leg and repeat the fire – or the fire-up spot. And then we get the my least favorite comeback – spot that gets overdone all the time is the jawbreaker, you know. So this is where we get the very brief double down. You know, Benoit hits a jawbreaker on Kurt Angle, so they're both down. And then we start getting some suplexes. Angle, let's see here. Angle stomps Chris and hits two awesome belly-to-belly suplexes. Kurt Angle goes for a third with 3 minutes left, but Benoit starts hitting the rolling German suplexes, right, and gets a fall with Kurt's angle lock. So now we're tied with 3-3 with basically 2 minutes left, okay? What do you think of those suplexes? Okay, this is 27 minutes into a match. Tell me about these suplexes.
The German suplexes where I was excited that they started doing like real wrestling moves, honestly. Like outside of like just trying to put each other in submission moves. Like I was pumped that they started doing these like suplexes, and I love a good suplex. And I think Chris Benoit like has one of the best like German suplexes, and the fact that he does three of them in a row, it's like phenomenal to me. And then I was thinking about how like Eddie Guerrero does like his suplexes, and he does three, like the three amigos. And I was like, oh, that's really cool that they like, because usually like you're not allowed to do like other wrestlers' moves. And so those two both had like a same like similar fashion of a move, just with a slight variant. And so,
but they're the radicals, you know, they came in together, yeah. Right? So, under 2 minutes left, Chris starts hitting chop blocks, which mirrors what Angle did at the very beginning of the match. Some more rolling Germans from Benoit. Angle sneaks in a low blow behind the ref's back, and Benoit gets two rope breaks as time winds down. Angle applies the ankle lock again with 10 seconds left, but Benoit taps after the bell. So we're still tied at the time limit. Then we get a run in from Fink, because referee Mike Chioda talks to Fink, and basically then Fink explains on the mic that Mike Chioda is demanding a sudden death overtime. I don't know why he said he was demanding it, but he did. And the crowd is really getting on Kurt Angle. They are starting to really shit on him. The wrestler's getting a hold and have a really long chat with the ref. They basically just break down the rest of the match all together, and that's fun. Benoit gets a crossface, and he gets the win. John, what'd you think of a 30-minute submission ultimate lead-thing match?
When this went to overtime, I was so mad. I was like, can this be over? Like, I literally was able to order food, have it delivered, eat the food, and this match still wasn't done. I was like, oh, my God. Can this be?
Yeah, taking notes, it took me almost like an hour and 15 minutes to get through this match.
I know. That's why I gave you this match. Because if I took the notes, who knows how long it would have been.
Well, okay. Well, I thought it was great. You know, it could have been a little more exciting, you know, if they had added maybe a no DQ type situation with it. And maybe, I don't know, just imagine if at one point, you know, a weapon's introduced or something like that. I just felt like they could have done a little more with that. But I mean, these are two of the best guys ever doing what they love to do, doing what they're good at. So, I mean, I can't shit on this. I think this is tremendous stuff, yeah. And I really enjoyed it. So what happened after that? Do you have this this thing that's next?
Yeah. So after that, they threw it straight to a video package for the last man standing match between Shane McMahon and The Big Show. Because Shane is just under his dad's skin. He, you know, bought WCW and right out from underneath him. He beat him at WrestleMania last month, actually earlier in the month. And, you know, Vince is still trying to get his payback on Shane. So they both make their entrances right out the gate. Shane scurries underneath the apron. And so Big Show is the big dumb idiot, and he follows Shane under the ring. But Shane comes out the other side, and with a kendo stick, and starts beating down Big Show. And it's not super effective. He gets up on the barrier and jumps off to hit him on the head. But Show catches him by the throat, and then Shane just starts whomping him in the ribs. And then Big Show eventually, I think he grabs Shane and just throws him over the top rope. And then when they were making their entrances, Big Show was like running the ropes and showing like how fast he can be. But I think he like gassed himself out, because after he threw Shane over the top rope, he like took forever to get back in the ring. Like it was the slowest like get back in I've ever seen. So Shane comes out and starts beating him with a chair, like five or six shots. At one point he does like the Raven spot where he runs off the rope and bounces and like leaps and just clock show in the back of the head. Awesome. Super great. Super great spot. Then Shane rolls out of the ring, gets under it, and pulls a cooler out. This is where JR starts immediately going, oh my God, what does he have? What is in that bag? And so he pours out. He puts a mask on. He's very protective. You know, puts his PPE on. And then he gets this bottle of clear liquid and dumps it on a rag. And JR immediately starts going, oh my God, what's that smell? and like no one in the crowd is reacting. Like the crowd's like, no selling this. But JR is like, oh my God, I'm going to pass out over here.
it's like chloroform basically. Right. And I love that though. I love that, you know, that old school thing of selling what's going on in the ring, you know, it's really important. Now, real quick side note, John, you and I have seen powder used quite a bit in live pro wrestling, right?
Yeah.
And that is a thing that the fucking crowd sells every time. They act like if that powder somehow makes its way in the crowd acts like it's poison gas. And it's so fucking funny because it's not.
Yeah. So the crowd no sells. JR, you know, starts getting faint. Vince comes out. And he starts beating down Shane because Big Show at this point is kind of incapacitated. And so Vince comes out and starts beating down Shane with a chair to cause both men to start getting the 10 count. Show makes it back to his feet first and hits some power moves, including a massive side slam. And then he puts Shane up onto the top rope and then tosses him from the top to the middle of the ring. And then the ref starts counting. He gets to 8. Big Show picks up Shane again and chokeslams him, and the count begins again. 8 is the magical number because Show picks up Shane again and then locks him in a torture rack. And as he's got the torture rack on, he's turned away from the entrance where the crowd is now getting on their feet because they are so excited. Test, of all people, is running out to the ring, and they are so excited. Test comes out, and he hits a... My notes say he hits a slipping big boot because he
that's his only move anyway, right?
Yeah, so he like hits this big boot, but Big Show is huge, and so he can't get all the way up, and he does get all the way up, but he also falls in the process.
Now, and Big Show had some beef with him, right, or something like that.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And Shane and Test have been best friends, you know, since Test was supposed to be banging Shane's sister and getting married to her. So they're just like boys. But then Triple H is like, no, I'm going to drug her and I'm going to marry her. And so, you know, Shane's just, Test is just heartbroken.
You know, pro wrestling stuff.
Yeah. So Test then gets a beating courtesy of the Big Show. They fight towards the entrance with Test like grabbing this keep off metal sign that's magneted to the barrier, and he starts beating up on Show with that. It's super flimsy. And then Shane grabs one as well, makes his way to the entrance, starts beating up on Big Show. Big Show goes like behind some curtains and comes out with a lead pipe, and he starts chasing Shane around with that.
Well, now let me stop you right here, okay? You were watching this. You're 14 years old, and you're watching this. First of all, as a 14-year-old, you got to fucking love Shane McMahon, right? I mean, this is like this whole match is about putting him over, like more, you know, putting him more over than anyone's ever been put over. You know, that's kind of what this
Shane's
is all
career.
About. Yeah, that's true. What did you think of him as a wrestler at this time? And, you know, were you prepared for what was about to happen next?
I thought that Shane was like the coolest wrestler, and he wasn't even actually a wrestler. He's a stuntman. But Shane was, I knew every Shane match, I was guaranteed a big spot. Because not that long prior to this was SummerSlam 2000, where he had a hardcore title match with Steve Blackman, where he leaped off the entrance. And so I was like, oh, we're getting another cool Shane spot in this match. I know we are. I just don't know how we're getting there.
You know what I find interesting, and I don't want to open up a can of worms, but I find it interesting that people hate Joey Janela for jumping off a roof, but the same people love Shane McMahon for jumping off whatever the hell he jumps off. You know, it's like because it wasn't on TV, you know, it wasn't a big deal. It sucks. And what I would argue is that all this is pro wrestling. It's all pro wrestling. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you don't. That's okay. You know?
Yeah. I guess maybe they're worried that at least like WWE is going to have like a doctor and a stretcher on hand in case, you know, Shane does like really hurt himself. I don't know if like a GCW show is going to have a doctor on hand.
Supposed to. Maybe a future doctor.
Yeah. So maybe that's where their gripe is. They're like, oh, no one's going to be there to save them. You just got like a random stranger who.
No, I think
shows up and sews people up, and they're like, well that doesn't so really
the,
count.
The people I'm talking about that are the ones that say that's not wrestling. You know, that's what I'm talking about. But go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
But if they see it on pay per view, then it is wrestling.
Yeah, it's awesome then. You know.
Yeah. So Jay, Big Show chases Shane around, and Shane starts climbing up the side of the stage, and Big Show follows. But Tess has recovered. And he comes out and he grabs Big Show's ankle and he has discovered some flimsy metal pan and he starts beating up Big Show with it and lays him on top of a random, quote, air filter that is set up that, you know, most big arenas have an air filter system just laying around. Yeah. So with Show laying on top of that, Shane jumps from the top of the stage, which is probably, what, like 25, 30 feet in the air?
Really high. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. So he jumps off of that and lands on the air filters, incapacitating both him and Big Show. Tess then slings Shane over a camera crane and shows how good his overhead press skills are to hoist Shane up and save him from the 10 count and give Shane the victory.
Now, I would argue, and I could be right, I could be wrong, but I would argue this whole show is about that spot. You know, the whole show, like, that's the most important thing that happens in this whole show as far as WWE's concerned, because they show it 5 million times. We're in other matches later and they're like showing another replay of it because it's fucking amazing. He lands perfect. He actually elbows him too. He actually elbows Show. I mean, it was fantastic. What'd you think of all this, John?
I thought it was great. And it was kind of quick and to the point. Like, we didn't stall it out. We didn't have this huge build up. We had a quick like 10-minute match to get to this spot that they wanted, and they accomplished it, and everyone like shit their pants and they got what they wanted out of this. Like, you want a big spot out of a Shane McMahon match, you got it.
It was great. I was scared that it was going to be really long because the previous match was so long, but no, that was the main event that was too long. So we had, you know, and that kind of bleeds into our next match that we'll talk about here in a second, is that some of these matches were, you know, disproportionately long, and then some of the ones you wanted to be longer weren't, and we'll get there. But after the match, Vince tells Stephanie that Hunter is now his only son. So Triple H is now his only son. Shane doesn't exist anymore, and that's awesome. I love that. And it's so, I mean, there's so many layers to that. It's just crazy. I mean, could you imagine trying to explain that sentence and what it means to a non-fan?
I mean, I feel like I could do it, but it's the most like asinine, ass backward thing that you'd have to like do.
Well, in storyline and in real life, because that's what I'm saying. There's all these layers to this that are.
Oh yeah, because like not long after this, after Shane's run over the next like year is when he disappears for 13, 14 years.
You got it, you know? And it's just very interesting. If you want to learn more about that, go to a different podcast. But yeah, so that was great. Steve Blackman is at WWF New York, and Grandmaster Sexay is there too. It's awkward, and they probably need a little more Up Dog.
What's up, dog?
Hey!
Not much. How about you? yeah, that segment was so awkward. Like, so Blackman misses his cue out right out the gate because JR's like, hey, how's it going there? And Blackman's just like looking around and misses. And then he's like, oh, did you say something, JR? Yeah, how's it going there? Oh, it's good. I have all this food in front of me, but I'm not eating any of it.
Well, he also was putting over Shane McMahon. Again, everything's about putting Shane over, you know. So he's putting him over for like, you know, oh, you've been in wars with Shane McMahon. Yeah, I have. You know, what'd you think of that? Oh, it's fucking amazing. And then Grandmaster Sexy just like comes in and starts humping him or something. It's weird.
Yeah. So, and then he's like, give me a fist bump. And Blackman's like, that's not my style. I'm not going to do that.
Well, next we get our triple threat European championship match, and I'm pretty sure that somehow the network was on fast forward for this match. It's weird. So we have the champion Matt Hardy versus Christian and Eddie Guerrero, and I'm gonna read through this. It happened, I don't know if this match might be 6 minutes long, I'm not sure. It was really, really short, and because of that, it's like they didn't take any spots out. They just like shortened everything and did it all real fast. So
yeah, go.
Yeah, there is zero selling in this match, and I mean it's fine and everything. It's just kind of like, Jesus Christ, this is in fast motion. So Hardy gets knocked to the outside right away. So we get some great stuff from Christian and Eddie. Eddie hits a fantastic hurricanrana. I mean, we see so many hurricanranas on the indies, and you know, some of them are good, some of them are not so good. And man, when you see one from Eddie Guerrero, it is just, it's a thing of beauty. Let's see here. We get a handstand DDT from the apron to the floor by Hardy. So this is so weird. Like Hardy does like a handstand on the apron and then like flies off and hits the DDT. Oh my God. Yeah. Really cool. I've never seen that, I don't think. I really like that. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
So Eddie hits a pair of brain busters on Matt Hardy for a near fall. We get the biggest pop of the whole night is Matt Hardy taking his shirt off, but it's like yay! There's no yay. It's just all high pitched voice. It's just funny. It reminds me of the Let's Go Cena. Cena sucks. You know. Hardy is on the turnbuckle in the corner, and Eddie goes for a Frankensteiner, but Christian holds on to Hardy's leg so that Eddie just falls. You know, he can't complete the Frankensteiner because, you know, he's being held there. So then Hardy pushes Christian off and hits a double clothesline to both of them. We get the old Alabama jam from Matt Hardy for a near fall on Eddie. Edge runs in and spears Matt Hardy. Jeff Hardy runs in. Christian hits Eddie with the unprettier, but Jeff Hardy swantons him, breaking the pin up, which is fucking terrifying. And Matt hits a twist of fate on Christian for the win.
And there's the match.
Yeah, it's really quick. I wish there was more, but that's it. Well, what'd you think, John?
I thought it was quick to the point. I was thoroughly confused as to why Matt Hardy was the champion because I don't remember that. But then they made sure to let us know that he won it on Thursday and that Christian brown-nosed his way into this match. But I'm Eddie walking out, I literally was like, oh, I miss Eddie.
Yeah, goddamn.
He was so good.
So good. He's fantastic. And, you know, I've talked about this before about other wrestlers. Eddie Guerrero is itsy bitsy. He is tiny. And, you know, he doesn't look like that in the ring. He works big. He works as a big guy, even though he's little. And, you know, what's funny about him is if you go back and you look at, which we're probably going to do this, there's a match in particular that may be his best match ever that we may review here in the next couple days. And he is the quintessential lucha base. He's bigger than the smaller guys in, you know, Mexico and Lucha Libre and stuff. So he's more of a base. So because of that, when he comes to WWE, it's crazy when he's the small guy because that's not how he wrestles. So because his, you know, he was wrestling as a bigger guy in Mexico as he's learning, he works big in the future in his 2001 matches and all the stuff in WWE. It's fantastic. The guy is just spectacular. So always good to see him. Now, after this, we get more replays of the elbow, probably 300 of them. And then we get a main event video package detailing the Stone Cold heel turn. And then we get the main event, John. What was the main event of the evening?
the main event was a winner takes all WWF Intercontinental WWF Tag Team Championship match pitting the two-man power trip, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H with Stephanie McMahon Helmsley, against the Brothers of Destruction, The Undertaker, and Kane. So Stone Cold was the WWF champion, Triple H was the Intercontinental champion, and the Bros of Destruction were the tag team champions.
Destruction Bros.
Yeah. And so I think we're starting to like run a little short on time, and we're running a little long on time at the same time. So I'm kind of just going to burn through these notes. Is that fine with you?
Yeah. A couple things I just want to mention is that JCW sign in the crowd, Juggalo Championship Wrestling. That's funny. Mm-hmm.
Juggalo.
Limp Bizkit rolling. We hear that. And, you know, when we were first making up the come on, yeah, joke back in the day about generic baby faces, I always, when I picture that in my mind, you know, and I hear it, I hear, you know, the singer from Limp Bizkit go, come on, from this song. He's not good. But by the way, if you're wondering where I stand on Limp Bizkit, and it's very important as a wrestling fan to have a stand, you know, when it comes to him and, you know, guys like Kid Rock and was it Memphis, Georgia, Florida Line or whatever, all these different people. I don't like Limp Bizkit except their first album. The first album is fantastic.
I don't even remember what that one was called. I just remember the chocolate starfish flavored water, whatever that one was.
It's called $3 Bills, y'all. That's what it's called. And there's a couple good songs on some of their future albums, but man, that album is awesome. So, yeah, John, well, tell us all about this.
Okay. So, Earl Hebner to start has zero control because he's probably thinking about the stolen shirts he's got on sale. After a forever long stalling, Kane and Triple H finally start the match. The Brothers of Destruction have control. Kane beating up on Triple H, Taker beating up on Stone Cold. Stone Cold wants to make friends, but Taker isn't here for it. Taker is reluctant to let Kane into the match since Kane has an elbow injury. Taker walks the ropes on Hunter, and then he does it on Steve, and then he clotheslines Triple H out of the ring. The heels retreat, but Kane clotheslines them from behind and brings Austin back to the ring. Triple H makes the save, stopping the last ride. JR notes how much power, or he notes how much more powerful taped fists are compared to bare ones.
That is a stupid ass wrestling trope. And if you want to learn more about that, there is a whole storyline with Hacksaw Jim Duggan at WCW with tape fists, where his grandmother, he goes to Ireland, and his grandmother is actually a taped fist champion, and they photoshopped a picture of his face over an old lady, and there's like a article in the newspaper. Man. Really, really funny.
Okay. Triple H and Austin work over Undertaker for a while. Taker refuses to tag out because of Kane's elbow issues.
Right, we got some story stuff, right? This is good.
We did, yeah. After three running elbow drops from Stone Cold, Taker grabs him by the throat, and then Triple H tries to run in, and he gets grabbed by the throat. But they both kick him in the gut and stop a double choke slam. Kane then blind tags an angry Undertaker, and he holds his own despite only having one arm that is working properly. Stone Cold eventually stops Kane's momentum by hitting him with an arm bar. Then Hunter rolls Kane out, and Stone Cold grabs a chair and hits Kane in the elbow.
Yes, hang on. I don't know if you saw this. Did you see this right here? There was something really funny that happened right here.
I don't know. Did I see it?
I don't think so. So during this heat spot where they're on the outside, you know, Kane gets hit with the chair. Triple H rolls Kane in. And as he's doing that, he takes his thumb and sticks it right in Kane's butthole. Just straight up. Just goes right in his butt. Fucking hilarious.
No, I did not see that spot.
That's absolutely. Go back and watch that. That's 100% real.
Okay. With the ref distracted, Hunter slams Kane's elbow into the steps. And then he rolls him back in and puts him in an elbow lock.
I thought you were about to talk about Austin hitting that side slam on Kane, which is not okay. What are we doing lifting that Kane one, out of here?
Well, and he could barely get him up, too.
Garbage. So
it was whack. Austin and Triple H keep working over the elbow. I think it's there's been 8 moves so far in the match in the first 18 minutes. they've discovered how to do a backdrop. I started getting real fed up with this match at the thing at this point. They started to learn how to do a backdrop, and then Hunter hits a pedigree on Kane. Is there anything you'd like to note about this pedigree?
Yes, I mean, we get a textbook Kane bump, which, yeah, I was watching this match, and me and you were texting back and forth, and I'm like, man, I gotta go to bed, I'm tired of this shit, and then that happened, and I woke up, and honestly, it took me another hour and a half to get to sleep, because I was so fired up about Kane hitting this hilarious Kane bump that made me laugh so hard.
Just one knee hits the mat, the other knee goes, other leg goes flying up behind him. It's the most bizarre thing. But instead of Hunter going for the pinfall, he tags out to Austin, which is so weird. It made no sense. Then Taker comes in and clotheslines Austin. Steph distracts Earl, and he literally shoves her off the apron. There's a ref bump, so he doesn't see Kane tag out. And he tries to tell Undertaker to get out since he is not the legal man. Though,
did you like that?
No, I didn't, because earlier in the match, Austin obviously came in without tagging, and Earl had no problem with it.
Yeah, but he's a heel. That's how that works.
It was frustrating, because I'm like, you let this guy do it, but you won't let that guy do it. Whatever.
Well, if you're new to our show, John is usually the he is
tag
the
specialist.
Yes, you're the tracker of who is legal and who isn't. So,
yeah, and it was so frustrating because Austin literally when Triple H was running away, Austin just got in the ring and Earl's like, "All right, let's go with it." No, he's not the legal man. Taker hits a last right on Triple H, but Earl will not count. Because he is not the legal man. We get another ref bump. And then Kane or Triple H. No, shit. Taker and Austin brawl in the crowd towards the back. Hunter is given the tag team title from Stephanie. But Kane boots him in the face as he tries to hit him with it. Kane then boots Stephanie in the face. Vince comes out of nowhere with a sledgehammer in his hand. He starts getting choked by Kane. He slides the sledgehammer over to Triple H, which it almost hits Stephanie in the face. And then sledgehammer shot to the head. Vince goes out, throws Earl Hebner back in the ring. We get a very, very, very slow 3 count. Hunter and Stone Cold Steve Austin are now the tag team champions, as well as Intercontinental and WWF champion.
A lot of stuff in this match. I mean, some might describe this as overbooked.
This felt like an NWF.
Yeah, match. We cover a local place called Northern Wrestling Federation that kind of specializes in these kind of multi-tiered finishes like this. And, I thought they executed it fairly well, except for Triple H's hammer shot on Kane was like to his – non-injured arm,
It was to the back of the head.
I don't think he got up that high, but okay. And a couple observations I have. Double knee braces on Austin, which I always think is funny. The Austin handshake spot where he was trying to, he was begging off, basically, and he tried to, make friends with The Undertaker and then Kane and then got destroyed for it. It reminds me so much of his stunning Steve Austin stuff from WCW back in the day. He was awesome as an NWA heel back then. Him and Brian Pillman were tag champions for a long time, and they're awesome. If you've never seen that, check that out. And then the biggest thing that I noticed in this match is just Undertaker is a fucking fantastic babyface and a fantastic wrestler in general. He made this whole match. It's Austin's probably hurt. Triple H is in his I'm going to bury everyone phase probably. Kane's kayfabe hurt. So really the only person who's kind of at full potential is Undertaker. And man, he was awesome in this match. Awesome.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if Taker wasn't in this match would have blew even harder than it already did. But Taker really added like a good element to it, because he was very passionate about, like, he, I think that was part of the reason he never wanted to tag Kane in, is because he wanted to be the one to like pin Austin and win the WWF title, because whoever pinned, you know, said champion. So like if Taker pinned Triple H, then he was the IC champion, Kane was the WWF champion. And so there's also like that inner storyline going of like, well, Taker wants the top prize. He doesn't want the IC title.
It's a lot of multi-layered storytelling here, which is, you know, great. And that's why I wouldn't describe this as an overbooked match, because, you know, all the run-ins and everything made a lot of sense, you know, and they were there for a reason. Well, John, you know, what are your final thoughts on Backlash 2001?
It was fun going back and seeing a lot of these guys that I haven't seen in a long time. And then also realizing that, like, some of these people have been a part of my life for 20 plus years at this point, like longer than most of my friends that I have. Like best friends or whatever. Like, I think I have one that's like 16, 17 years at this point. But like, I've had Hunter and Stephanie like as a part of my life for the last 20 years. And I'm like, holy crap, I didn't realize you guys have been here that long.
Well, what about you? I enjoyed watching the show. There were definitely some parts where I was not happy about having to do it. However, my main gripe, if I want to like criticize the show, is that, you know, the main event and then that obviously the Iron Man match were just so long. And then that European title match was so short. You know, I mean, you can't, it never makes any sense to me when you have a match that's like 45 minutes, which this main event was almost 45 minutes. You can't spare 3 minutes off of that to make that, you know, European Championship match, just make it 10 minutes. You can't do that, really? You know, but I get it. It's because no one in management gives a shit about the European Championship. It's who you are and where you're at in the card and all that stuff. And I get it. But I never get that. I really enjoyed seeing Babyface Undertaker just fucking doing his thing. I haven't seen as much of that as I would like. In fact, my favorite Undertaker is actually, you know, the original heel gimmick where he's the Western Undertaker. That's my favorite thing, you know. But man, after seeing this, kind of changing my mind a little bit. I really like that. I liked the matches that, you know, that I got to cover, and I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, I'm looking at like the Wikipedia of this. Like, the first match was 8 minutes, 8 minutes, 11 seconds, 12 minutes, 31. Mm-hmm. 11 minutes, 6 minutes, 25 minutes. Like, it was very disproportioned, like, time-wise.
Yeah, and I don't think that includes entrances either, because
that's just, like, bell to bell.
Right, you got it. So, because that Iron Man match was certainly another 5 minutes or so just from the entrances and the shit-talking and all that. But yeah, man, well, this was a lot of fun, you know? I'm interested to do more of these. And, John, I can't wait for you to see what we have in store next, because we're going to do an old WCW pay-per-view that has one of the greatest matches of all time on it. And it's not like one of these ones where you're going to be like, oh, it's that? That's the greatest tag match of all time. You're going to be like, oh, I want to see this for sure. So I'm looking forward to that. Any closing thoughts before we sign off, John?
I'm excited to kind of see what match or pay-per-view you want to do. And then honestly, I would open it up to anybody else. Like, if you guys have some like old pay-per-views that you would love for us to like check out and cover, maybe, like, feel free to suggest them. Please. I know everyone is so excited to like give us, you know, feedback when we ask for it. You guys might not even be at this part of the episode. You might just already turned it off. But if you're listening still, we would love suggestions on like an old pay-per-view that we can find on the network, which would include WCW, ECW, WWF. Like, give us something.
Yeah, my only stipulation that I would throw in there is I prefer not to tread heavily, you know, ground that's already been walked on quite a bit. So, you know, I wouldn't, you know, be interested in doing things that are just kind of overdone, if that makes any sense. But either way, we would love your suggestions. And if you have something that you'd like to us to kind of throw the road home, you know, signature on, we'll be happy to do that. But all right, John, anything else?
No, just give us a B or a C show. No A shows. So give us like Taboo Tuesday from 2007 or like Cyber Sunday 2003.
I would love to do the Cyber Sunday. That's like the one
I was at one of the Cyber Sundays.
Really? The one that I'm thinking of, and I hope I'm not wrong and not putting a foot in my mouth, is that it's an ECW one, right? And it's just like
there was no ECW ones, I don't think.
There's an ECW one that has something to do with the internet and cyber, and it's where Brian Pillman shows up and he's like, "I'm Brian fucking Pillman." And it's like, you know,
okay. You're talking like old ECW era. I was thinking ECW, like WWE
era. Yuck. I'll watch it if we have to, but
December to dismember.
No, thank you. All right. Well, you guys know where you can find us. It's the Road Home FW on all social media platforms. John's at jhat05 and I am at Drucifer Tweets. For me and John, thank you guys so much for listening.
Sayonara.